Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Sorry that I wasn't in my seat at the appropriate time to get started. Let me just grab my... So, I think, is it in order for me to move the...
Yep. 3071, you want to go with first?
3071.
All right, Representative Hayden moves 3071. Be recommended and passed and re-referred to Finance, Committee on Finance.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House File 3071 is essentially a bill that takes a look at unemployment. And essentially, we have people that, as we know, we're in a recession this year, and we have high unemployment. I think we're close to 10% nationally, over 10% nationally, around 8 or 9%. It fluctuates here in Minnesota. And we have... a number of people who receive unemployment insurance, but we have a population that works in our state that is not eligible for unemployment insurance, or their unemployment insurance benefits have run out. And we are proposing that a person who has lost their job since October 2nd, 2008, and has exhausted or ineligible for benefits under the federal state extended unemployment compensation program or any of the other programs should not have to meet an asset test if they have to apply for MFIB, or public assistance. Typically, when you apply for MFIB, there is an asset test that is applied, and you would have to spend down your savings or other things in order to qualify. And though we're not here to talk about that issue today, what we do think is that people who have been working and that have typically a modest savings account that they use to supplement their income, that they use to pay for things like, you know, laundry service to keep their clothes clean, or to put a little extra gas in their car as they're going around looking for work, that we don't want them to spend all of that money down as they're continuing to look for work just to receive this benefit. We know that when people do find work, or when they look for work, that typically the benefits that they get, and I talk to a lot of my friends that are in the construction industry, they are suffering just with the unemployment benefits, and that doesn't really cover the cost if they have to go an extended way to look for work. So what we're hoping is that we could not count the assets with respect to anybody that was recently employed and that was unemployed, so that they could be ready for work as soon as they are able to find it.
Questions, members?
I think we do have a...
No, just on the context of the bill. Yes. All right. So the first testifier, Jeanette Jones, please. Welcome to the committee. Welcome. And if you could just state your name before you start, so we have it for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Jeanette Jones. You have to forgive me, I'm new at this, so I'm kind of nervous.
Please proceed. There's no reason to be nervous. So.
Well, I'm here just for a testimony of my own self. I am employed, but I work a job that normally do 10 months. And after that 10 months, it's like you go look for assistance, and what I have is like a car, and files as the assets. They use that to determine if I'm eligible for assistance or not, and I just find that kind of strange. I believe that by me working and things that I accumulate, you know, that I should be able to keep. I would just ask that the assistant for like 3 months, because that's when the job, I work for the public school, I say that. And we have that gap within for us is 2 or 3 months. And far as making to pertain my household and stuff, I just need some extra help to assist me. But they say I have to either sell the car or use the assets I have, which is not nothing, actually. And so then I have to start all over from the bottom, and then I'll be struggling in order to make ends meet for my family. So
that's what it is. So you said you work for a school district?
Yes.
Okay. And in that capacity, you don't qualify for unemployment insurance?
No. And I don't, actually, I really don't know why.
Well, that's a state. I don't know why either. That's state law. So, and that's just how we set it up for school employees, which is a whole other issue. Okay. Okay. Questions, members? Yeah. Representative Norton,
yeah. Yeah, can we have the clarification on the sale of the vehicle? Because I'm looking at the exemptions. And no one should require her to sell a vehicle. And I just came in and I heard that was something you were told. So I'm just looking for clarification.
Representative Hayden.
In the asset limit, and I don't know the value of your car, but it has a value limit. And it looks like the asset limit is up to $15,000 total loan value on all vehicles. So I don't know how much what her loan to value is on the car, but I think we can make a reasonable assumption that's the issue.
Well, as far as my case, I have a used vehicle, and they sums it up as $500 worth of value. So I can sell that and use some of that assets. So.
Mr. Chair.
Right. Representative Hayden.
Well, you know, I think this also gets at maybe another issue, but for another day, which is the implementation of our program. And I think it may vary from county to county and worker to worker. You know, we do know that it sounds like in her particular instance that they shouldn't be counting that as an asset. We just don't know case for case, but in state law, they shouldn't be counting her vehicle.
Well, yeah, I think the point we're trying to say is if you hear that from someone, you should tell them that's not right. So that you can have a vehicle up to $15,000 in value that would be exempt from the asset limit, so for whatever that's worth.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, because I didn't know that.
$1,500? We have...
Oh, I have...
Look, Danielle, can you clarify that for us?
Two forms. One says 15,000. One says
1,500. Yeah, for MFIP is 15,000 total loan value for all vehicles, I think.
That's for GA, it looks like, Mr. Chair.
15,000 for MFIP.
1,500, it looks like it's for general assistance.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
This is for the MFIP program.
Right. So there may... Okay, we're getting off a little bit into the weeds here, but... It'd be important information to understand, though. Other questions for the witness? So, well, thank you very much for coming down today.
Thank
we really
you,
appreciate
Mr.
it.
Chair.
Thank you. All right. Ms. Fitzsimmons.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Alexandra Fitzsimmons, and I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Catholic Conference. The MCC is the public policy voice of the Catholic Church throughout Minnesota. I'm here today to speak in support of Representative Hayden's bill, which removes the MFIP and GA asset limits for our neighbors who lost their job within, as of today, the last 16 months, have exhausted or are ineligible for unemployment benefits and are eligible for MFIP or GA, respectively. This will help many struggling individuals and families throughout our state. And as I've said to this committee before, every member here likely has hundreds of painful stories about our neighbors who have lost their jobs, homes, and health insurance and are fighting to provide themselves and their families with basic needs. Asset limits are inconsistent with Minnesota's emphasis on work and self-reliance and punish the very families that are trying to maintain or achieve economic independence by building their savings. Forcing individuals to spend down long-term savings to qualify for short-term assistance leaves individuals and families more vulnerable in the future. By reforming the asset limit for MFIP and GA under the specific circumstances outlined in this bill, Minnesota can take a significant step toward encouraging and allowing our neighbors to save and build for the future. As you know, assets are limited to $2,000 for MFIP applicants and $5,000 for ongoing MFIP recipients. The current asset limit for GA is $1,000, and we already heard about the how vehicles factor in. This amount oftentimes represents needed funds to pay rent, a mortgage payment, health care needs, or other pressing needs. In its final report, the Legislative Commission to End Poverty in Minnesota by 2020 identified six broad challenges to ending poverty in our state. One of the challenges addressed this very issue. According to the Commission's report, public assistance programs must work to move people toward financial self-sufficiency. Too often, well-intentioned programs end up having the opposite effect, especially when they lead to asset depletion as a condition for participation. The Commission also identified the need for helping Minnesotans build and maintain financial assets. To these ends, the Commission recommended enacting public policies that encourage maintenance of assets, like this bill. In order to end poverty, individuals and communities must have the opportunity to build wealth. As the Commission eloquently stated and simply stated, income is how we get by, assets are how we get ahead. As such, I encourage this committee to support this bill and encourage households who are already struggling to make ends meet or who can no longer make ends meet retain their modest assets. Thank you.
Representative Lothar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the witness, I appreciate your comments about kind of the circumstances people face. And I think it's important to know, as someone who sits on the jobs task force that the House has, that we heard that 4,000 to 5,000 people a month may be going off of unemployment without having had a job in spite of really diligent efforts to seek jobs. We had testimony from people who it's the hardest job they've ever had. They're applying every day at every possible source of employment they can get, and just because of the nature of this very harsh economy, they're not able to step up. And we're going to have a lot of people who are going to get to the end of unemployment with the extensions and not having a job. And we've been warned that that may be the next wave of foreclosures, mm-hmm. because these are oftentimes middle-class people who have worked hard, paid for those the house and the things that they've been able to acquire, and then have managed to kind of hang on with getting about half of what they normally earn at best out of unemployment, and then kind of hitting the wall. If they don't have children, as I understand this, then they go into the asset limits for GA, which are currently a car worth $1,500, and you could maybe go up to another $1,000 if you had not a single penny more in any kind of savings or countable assets. And while I think this proposal probably needs to be narrowed and focused given our fiscal realities, I think we do need to all think about, you know, should there be a safety net for people who have really been working hard, have been trying desperately to get a job in the current tough economy, and in spite of those best efforts are still at the end of their extension without something? And what does that say when we've stepped up for others and we're not willing to step up for them? And so I think we really need to kind of wrestle with that. And we've had very different asset limits, whether you have children under 18 at home or not, and yet we know that the layoffs have and the long-term unemployed are disproportionately people over age 50. They may be empty nesters. They've really done a good job maybe of raising their kids. But now they're at a situation in which they're not very attractive in the job market. If you're 59 years old or 60 years old and you're trying to find a job, it's really hard. And so what do we want to have as a society, as a safety net for those people who I still want to keep looking for a job. They still want to find it, but how are we going to help them carry forward? And I think we're going to have to, as we wrestle with this issue as it goes on to other committees, really think about, you know, all the different circumstances that people find themselves in, because I think we're encountering a new group of poor that are different than the poor we've traditionally focused on in this committee. And so I want to say I appreciate you raising the issue, because I think the times are asking us to have a different conversation about who are the deserving poor, who needs a safety net, and how low do you have to go in your life before there's some assistance till you can get that next paycheck.
Representative Gard.
Thanks for bringing this forward, Representative Hayden. I have a, I'm just reading through this again, and it says persons who have lost a job since October 20th, 2008 and haven't exhausted or ineligible for benefits and so on. I mean, is it possible you could have someone who's lost a job since October 20th, 2008 and now is employed, but they did exhaust their benefits?
No,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're trying to target people who lost a job and remain unemployed.
Yeah, and they have to meet income eligibility guidelines to get on the program anyway. So they would still have to show that they were unemployed and didn't have any source of income.
Thank you.
Right. Further question? Okay. Then Representative Hayden will renew his motion that House File 3071 be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Finance. All in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you, members.
Representative Hayden.
Mr. Chair, members. Mr. Chair, move House File 2564.
Representative Hayden moves that House File 2564 be recommended, passed, and referred to the Committee on Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 2564 is essentially moving towards the same issue with respect to people who have lost their job. What we are saying now is that that we temporarily suspend the time limit, the 60-month time limit for cash assistance that you receive between July 1st, 2010 through July 30th, 2012. And the time that you receive assistance during that time is not counted towards your 60-month time limit. And the reason for bringing this bill is very much similar to the same situation. We have a growing group of people who are unable to find work, especially people in general, if you will, but especially people that are lower income, and that we do have a 60-month time limit, though we do have the ability to grant some exemptions to that and carry some folks over that time limit. So what we're hoping with this bill is that this gives people a little time to receive the very basic of services and assistance as they're looking for work and as our economy starts to rebound. We know that and one thing I didn't mention in my earlier comments, there's been some studies that have done that says that since we've had TANF, since we've had the quote-unquote welfare reform, that children have gone deeper into poverty, and that even though people may be cycling through, that it is the kids, it is the children that are being affected. The program is called the Minnesota Family Investment Program, and it really, really targets children. It's the head of household that we have a tendency to focus on, but it's the children that the program is really for. So what we're hoping to do is to keep our kids strong, keep their parents with a way in which to receive some cash assistance as they are dealing with this most difficult economy. I heard somebody once say, you know, that if the middle class, you know, is suffering a cold, that, you know, people that are working class have pneumonia, well, this population is pretty near death. So I'll leave it with that and questions for the members.
We do have some witnesses. So Deb? Miss, come on. Welcome to the committee.
Hi.
My name is Kim Hosmer, and I'm part of the Welfare Rights Committee. We're an organization of low-income women, primarily women. We've all either been on welfare or we're on welfare, so we know. That's why I can comment from the aisles about, you know, what the asset limits are, because we've been there. But we're here to support this bill. You know, the first one suspends the time limit for 2 years so that people can have that break while the economy is in this throes. You know, they keep telling us it's going to get better. But, you know, in the meantime, 437 is barely a pittance already. And if you take that away from people, you're going to have lots of problems. And we've talked about this, about the general assistance grants and Minnesota Care and that thing too, but it's really crucial. And I guess, you know, there's probably other people that can give you better statistics and that kind of thing. But what I really want to say to you is that when you get up in the morning, you look in the mirror and you say, why am I doing this job? I really hope that you're here because you want to make it better for all of us. And I think this bill does that. It's a compassionate way to deal with the situation we're in, to get people through that crisis. And, you know, I could give you a laundry list of things I would do differently in the welfare department. I have issues with how welfare reform has been done and how it's not been done. But the crisis is now, and people are struggling now. And if people who have had a job and have a car and have had a middle-class lifestyle are struggling, the people who don't have those skills, who have been out of the workforce for a while, we don't know. I don't know how much real screening Department of Human Services did when they implemented welfare reform. I don't know if they did a really comprehensive job of saying, you know, how many people that are we serving really should be on disability because of mental health or physical issues or, you know, addictions, whatever. I never saw that happen. Now, maybe something was going on behind the scenes that I wasn't aware of, but I didn't see that as a focus. And so my guess is that there are people maybe in higher numbers than in the general population that have those issues, and so that makes it even more difficult to find and keep employment when it's a hiring market. It's not, you know, it's not the market for the people looking. You know, people are getting laid off, cut back, all kinds of things. So that's the first bill, and the second one builds in. It's a way to put a temporary hardship extension in counties where the unemployment rate is higher than normal. And again, it's a response to the crisis that we're in. It's a temporary fix. It's a hopeful bill, I think, in that it looks forward to a time when it's going to be easier. So I'm really hoping that you'll think seriously about your role here and pass this bill. Both of them.
Thank you. Question, Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the testifier, the $437, is that the cash assistance?
That is cash assistance for one mother and one child, okay, or two people in a household.
But
per month. Per month.
Right.
And if there are also bills that have been put through this committees here at the legislature to try to cut money from those same families. Over the years, we fought those bills. We fought the $125 SSI cut that would have taken that out of the grant, the MFIP grant for a family if they had a disabled family member. We fought back against the $50 housing cut that said if you're lucky enough to be one of the small percentage of poor people on welfare that's lucky enough to have Section 8 or, you know, public housing or some kind of subsidized housing, that we're going to take $50 out of your grant. You know, we've had to battle these things over the years, and I'm hearing rumors that some of that stuff is still trying to bubble up again, maybe from the governor, I'm not exactly sure. But, you know, I just want to challenge you to really stand firm and get behind the people who need you the most. And, you know, the governor can veto what he wants to veto, but you people have the power to override that. And I just want to remind you of that. So.
Thank you. That's all.
So, Representative Hayden, thank you very much for testifying. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Sure. My name is Deb Konichny, and I am also a member of the Welfare Rights Committee. And I know we're kind of doing testimony. Is that okay for
both
bills?
I think that's better.
Okay, good. The reality is, as we all know very clearly, we are living in a deep economic crisis, one that we haven't seen since the Great Depression. And tens of thousands of people in this state are losing jobs, are facing unemployment, are running out of unemployment benefits, are facing housing losses. Excuse me. And the whole time we're in this crisis, families who are forced to exist on the meager survival income that welfare provides are having their five-year time limit clock ticking away, when there is absolutely no chance of getting a job that will get us off welfare. That clock is steadily ticking and ticking and ticking. And what this bill does is stops the clock, because there is no possibility of finding a job that's going to support our families when even highly qualified workers are coming up against 100, 200 other applicants for every one job that's out there. There is no way. Women, mothers on welfare, which is the majority who is on welfare as mothers, and their children is actually the largest majority that receives welfare, are usually, when we do get a job, we are the last hired and we are the first fired when that job or that company decides to start downsizing. That's what happens to us. So these two bills provide a fix in an economic crisis that is really, really crucial to do. This is like the poor people's unemployment insurance. That's what MFIP is, because even when we do have jobs, we often don't build up enough quarters to qualify for unemployment benefits. So when we lose that job, we don't have anything. Also, as you know, more and more people are falling out of jobs and running out of unemployment benefits. And what is there? Welfare is the only thing that's there to hold you up. Unless you have family, you're lucky enough to have family that has a lot of extra income. But let me tell you, when you're low income, that's not the case. So this is the unemployment insurance for low-income families. And the $437 a month that a family, a mother and a child, or a caregiver and a child live on per month, that's the same amount that we received in 1986. There has not been an increase in welfare payments, monthly payments, for 16 years. And at the time they were increased, it was a 1% increase, enough to buy maybe an extra gallon of milk a month. That's what we're looking at. This is like barely survivable. It isn't even survivable as an income. And we're calling for this legislature to take a stand and support children who are the majority who receive this. We support children and their caregivers in this time of economic crisis. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Abler.
To the bill, not for the witness, Mr. Chair.
Oh, okay. Whenever. Any questions, sure, for the witness? We have another testifier. Okay, thank you very much. Ms. Fitzsimmons. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Alexandra Fitzsimmons, and I'm still the policy director for the Minnesota Catholic Conference. And I'm here today to speak in support of another of Representative Hayden's bills, House File 2564, which temporarily suspends the five-year lifetime limit for families receiving MFIP cash assistance. Because we are all responsible for all, we must address the struggles that our neighbors through Minnesota are facing.
House File 2564 does this within the specific context of our state's current economic climate by pausing the clock at a time when job opportunities are decreasing. The members of this committee know full well that Minnesotans throughout our state are struggling, whether they live in Minneapolis, Apple Valley, Duluth, St. Cloud, Lake Elmo, Faribault, New Prague. Our neighbors are hurting. Our faith calls upon our community to place first the needs of our neighbors who are poor and vulnerable. Our sisters and brothers with the greatest needs are to come first in our decisions. This bill does that. This bill creates a policy that tells Minnesota that we will not punish families who face multiple barriers, are struggling to move themselves and their families out of poverty in an economy that is also struggling. Temporarily suspending the time limit for families receiving MFIP cash assistance during a time when job opportunities are scarce is the just thing to do. Punishing families when jobs aren't available is wrong, and furthermore, it is short-sighted. Minnesota's families who reach the MFIP time limit have significant and oftentimes multiple physical and or cognitive impairments and or disabilities. According to a 2003 report from the Minnesota Department of Human Services, 44% of parents who left MFIP as a result of time limits were found to require referral for diagnosis and treatment of a mental illness. MFIP recipients with serious barriers to employment are less likely to find jobs and more likely to exhaust their 60 months of eligibility for cash assistance. In fact, as Ms. Konichny said, they are oftentimes the last hired and the first fired. We must all work together to lighten the loads of our neighbors who are in the greatest economic need. Poverty diminishes the lives of our sisters and brothers and also our communities. Please support this bill. Thank you.
Representative Bunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hayden, or to the department if they're in the room. I have two questions.
Is there anybody that has a question for the witness?
Oh, sorry.
Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Ms. Fitzsimmons, you represent the Catholic Church, correct?
Yes.
Is it part of Catholic social teaching that we should try to lift people out of dependency and out of poverty and out of despair and towards self-sufficiency and independence?
It is part of Catholic, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, it is part of Catholic social teaching to help individuals become more self-sufficient, yes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Fitzsimmons, what we really need to do then is be helping these people off of unemployment and off of, I understand the desire to expand this to help people who are, we have more people unemployed right now. But the ultimate answer is helping people get employment, helping people become self-sufficient and independent to the extent possible. And my concern about some of this is that at a time when the state is $1.2 billion in deficit and additional spending, especially deficit spending, we can't do that. We got to balance our budget. But additional spending actually takes money from other people and makes them more dependent and makes it less possible for them to do for themselves. So I'm just wondering how the Catholic Church deals with that issue.
Ms. Fitzsimmons.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, I would first say, going back to your first point about Catholic social teaching and helping individuals become self-sufficient, is that there's also part of Catholic social teaching, as you know, that talks about individuals who, as I shared in this testimony, have multiple barriers to perhaps gaining self-sufficiency in a way that, in part, that we're talking about here. And I would say, too, that looking at temporarily extending the time limit here in responding to what's happening in the economy, but also responding, again, to these multiple barriers that individuals are facing, that it's one thing to talk about perhaps a specific group of individuals who may have, you know, certain qualities and certain skills, while another group may not have those because of other issues that they're dealing with in their daily lives.
Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Fitzsimmons, just a quick follow-up. Are we talking about people who are incapable of being employed, or?
Ms. Fitzsimmons.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, I wouldn't use that word choice, no. I would again say that individuals who do face multiple barriers to employment.
Well, Mr. Chair, and I would agree with that fact, that isn't a term to use, and that's exactly my point, is these are people who are temporarily in need, and again, when we spend additional state money like this, we're taking it from other people who may be right on the edge as well. And again, the goal for us should be to try to turn our economy around and focus on that approach, because it truly lifts people out of dependence and poverty. But again, to my point, these these approaches do not help us in the long run. They are stopgap measures. And I would also argue, you're here before us many times on these issues. Catholic social teaching also talks about us as individuals and communities helping raise people up. Government has a role to play, but it isn't the total role.
So, Mr. Chair.
President Hayden.
And I don't necessarily disagree this time with Representative Gottwald with this caveat that people do, their families do help them, that their communities are helping them, and that also this program is a program that just doesn't give people money, that there is very, very rigorous requirements for people to go out and look for work. There are job counselors, and there is a screening system that tries to figure out where people are. So if they can work, they'll try to figure out how they can get to the workforce center and find a job. If they are dealing with multiple impairments, they can get the help or treatment, or even get smarted out, if you will, or go on to SSI. So to some extent, I think that if we change the context to this program is a program that actually helps people find employment that may be having a really hard time because of where they sit socioeconomically, we could change the tune. The other thing I'd like to add is that in the governor's budget, there's about $28 to $29 million that was stated to go to this population that is going into the general fund. And so to some extent, there is money that was designated to this population to help with those things and to help everybody who may, those that are that have used up their time limit, those that are temporarily out of work, and those that are on the verge, to help them. And that's what the money is to be used for. And there are a lot of reasons why we're refinancing that money. But I just want to make sure that we kind of put that on the table as we think about this issue from a fiscal perspective.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I actually I was going to ask our witness, Representative Gottwald was sort of implying, I think, unless I misunderstood him, that having people, giving them some extra time on MFIP kind of continues a dependency and doesn't assist them to move into the workforce. And I was just going to ask our witness to sort of describe what MFIP, you know, what it does, and but maybe that's already been kind of answered by Representative Hayden. But you know, I think the point is well made. This is not a program, you know, even if it used to be, and I hear this a lot from constituents, they don't realize that welfare, quote unquote, was totally changed under Clinton, and to the degree that it ever was just a, you know, dependency for some people, it's not that anymore, as far as I understand it. Ms. Fitzsimmons, is that how you understand it as well?
Yes, and thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I mean that's, and I think too, when you talk about the MFIT program, that the next line is usually Minnesota's Welfare to Work program. That it's, I mean that's the goal of the program, is to help individuals, as Representative Gottwald was talking about, helping individuals become, you know, self-sufficient and helping them, you know, become whole persons. Not that they're not whole persons, but to really grow in full potential. And that I think with this bill and temporarily extending that time limit to help individuals be able to meet that is important.
Thank you very much. And I'd like the department to come down if someone is here. I think we're going to have some questions. Representative Vaughn.
Representative Abler earlier had.
You could wait to the bill.
That's what we're on.
We're to the bill now. Yes, yeah, so Representative Abler, sure.
Actually, my comments are for all three bills, and yeah. So it's just, I think I'll have one comment to all of them. So I can, do you want me to do it after the department says theirs? Or
I don't think the department is here to testify. They're here to answer questions.
I'll just say my thing then.
Okay.
I commend Representative Hayden for bringing these bills forward, because I know that they're heavily on his mind, and it's our job to represent people that we care about. And I've brought bills forward that I knew were kind of long shots to get things talked about and point out some concerns, and I recognize and respect his heart in that part. I wish this was an informational hearing today and not just a voting hearing, because I think that the fact that we're hearing this bill implies that there's a chance we're actually going to find a way to do this, and maybe there's some way that's planned about that. But I had the privilege of serving on the Commission on Poverty, and we spent a long time not really addressing some of the things we could have addressed because we wrote a nice report. But there's a lot of programs, and they sometimes pass like ships in the night. And what we didn't get out of that commission was a way to consolidate, coordinate, and fine-tune some of the things we do. It just didn't seem to work out that way. And I was disappointed that we didn't get to that part. To the point that, in the last meeting, I suggested we've all gotten to know each other for 6 months or something, and we're all here together. How about if we don't disband and just kind of meet at our own time? This is all the people here, and we, since this is just as the budget began to hit hard times in the last year, and we can kind of soft land these programs and find ways to serve people even better with the limited resources at our disposal. And the commission wasn't willing to do that at the time. But the needs of the people that we hear about, you know, in these kinds of hearings are extremely real and challenging to us. And I didn't add up all the math. If it's 29 million or something, that's a considerable piece. But we're facing a billion two and 5.4, and it would be helpful to me as we go through these hearings to hear from people who have been successful in working their way through our various, you know, hand up programs and, you know, helping people through and how did they succeed and what really worked better. And so that's the questions I always ask in my office to people when they come by. So, I'm happy to keep working with this. I can't vote for this bill today because I don't think it's realistic to think that we can do this in the face of all of our challenges. And so when I vote no, it's not out of disrespect to the effort and to the heart of the author or to the needs of the people. I have a number of chairs that it seems like the same guy sits in the same chair. And yesterday it was a firefighter that was concerned about Minneapolis firefighting. And later it was the GMC person sitting in the same chair. And then there was the education person sat in the same chair about the challenges they face. In 2003, I sat through a similar process, and I coined the term essential, important, and nice. And I think this is a good way to get the conversation going about what is essential, what's important, and what do we just like doing, and what has mild benefit. And so that dialogue will be much held this session, and I hope that we're up to the task. And I commend Representative Hayden for bringing forward the needs of his friends.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I absolutely appreciate Representative Abler's comments with respect to kind of how we look at these things, and I most certainly bring these things, you know, if anyone who's over here every day like we are doesn't understand the budget crisis that we're in, then I'm not quite sure if they should be over here, not quite frankly. So I bring these in that context, and I want members to know that because I know that that is heavily on their mind. I think the thing that I do want to say, and as we bring the other bill, is we should have a real discussion about poverty. We should have a real discussion about the participants of these programs, and we should have a real discussion regardless to whatever crisis or fire that we think we have today. I think that's important because what I see, and I'm pretty new around here, is that often we don't talk about the things that are tough and we find a reason, and the budget is definitely legit, but we find a reason not to talk about this issue. What I'm talking about is poverty. What I'm talking about is hard-working, you know, folks who, for whatever situation, find themselves in poverty. And typically, poverty is generational. You know, the wealth isn't being passed on from one group to another. And so I just want to make sure, and with everyone here and the questions that we ask, I think are absolutely legitimate, and we should be asking those questions. But let's not have a situation where we, as Representative Abler said, as we dance around the issues, even if we create a commission. So with that being said, I want to...
Don't do that yet.
Okay.
Yeah. We still have some questions.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. Representative Bunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for the department, maybe two. First question for the department is regarding the 2564 or possibly also the next one, the 2576, in terms of the extending the time frame. But in particular, the first one, the 2564, is this even legal or doable under federal requirements?
Mr. Chair, Representative.
Just identify yourself for the record.
Oh, yes. Jennifer Blanchard with the Department of Human Services. If we're paying for this with state funds, then yes, we can stop the clock.
Okay. Well, a follow-up to that, when we talked about the $29 million, the TANF money, is that considered state funds or federal funds?
It's considered
right. So
federal.
We couldn't use the $29 million of TANF anyways for this extension. Is that what you're telling me?
For stopping the clock.
For the stopping the clock portion.
For stopping the clock, which is different than the extension hardship. With the extension hardship, yes, we have right. the capability of using TANF funds.
For right.
However, Mr. Chair, if the money is recycled into the general fund, it then becomes state funds. Is that right? Okay. I just wanted to clarify.
No, that's a fair clarification. So for 2564, we could not use TANF funds directly. For 2576, we could use TANF funds because we could define a hardship. The state has discretion to define a hardship.
We have the capability of extending up to 20% of a caseload, and we have not reached that capacity.
What percentage are we at?
You know, I don't have that information with me, but I can provide that to you.
That would be helpful. Representative Bunn.
And then my second one has to do with this more general question. We have currently the conditions under which extensions can occur. And I have the list, ill, incapacitated, hard to employ, some specific employment situations. But just earlier we talked, the number was mentioned, I think, by Ms. Simmons about that 44% of those post to 60 months were found to have various kind of mental illness issues or mental health issues. And also the comment was made about whether the department, didn't adequately address whether it was true or not. I'm just saying made the claim that possibly the issue of whether or not some people are long-term unemployed because they truly have things going on that may better be qualified as a disability that would be long-term that makes it maybe for much of their life not possible to work. So if you could give us any further clarity on this issue of how well the department in that process of working with the longer-term unemployed through this program and trying to, do all the requirements to help them find work, they put the effort into determining whether or not there's a long-term disability issue here that needs to be addressed, and therefore they would be qualified under some other program. And then also whether or not this category of extension, I guess we just addressed that with his question, there's some leeway in here to, if your department gets to define what it means hard to employ, that during these more recessionary times, one could possibly reshape that definition to allow for a larger number of people and reach that cap. Those are the two issues I'd like to hear more on.
Mr. Chair, Representative, as you know, we have now what is called Family Stabilization Services, which was enacted in 2007. And the eligibility criteria mirrors the extension criteria, except for a couple, and then there are some additional criteria. And the notion is that we are trying to identify barriers to engagement earlier to ensure that if there are other programs that people may qualify for, that they are getting the assistance in applying for those programs, SSI being one of them. So, yes, there is a lot of work that is done with nonprofit agencies to ensure that people's barriers and strengths are identified, to ensure that they are at their capacity to find employment or are then extended. With regards to your question with the extension, as the bill is written, people would first be determined for other extension criteria, and if they did not meet that criteria and happen to live in a county with a unemployment rate 5% or higher, then they would qualify. That's as the bill is written. So if there were to be other criteria, that would need to be written into the bill.
Representative Bunn.
A follow-up on the first point in terms of this family stabilization, at what point in the 60 months does that click in? Is that from day one? They're evaluated for whether there's more special needs that they would really qualify for their program, or after some period of time of determining that they're hard to place or hard to employ, or there may be other barriers. When does that evaluation of other barriers happen?
Yeah. Ms. Lynch.
Mr. Chair, Representative, last legislative session, we did pass a law that when someone is in the diversionary work program, if they meet any of the FSS eligibility criteria, they are determined unlikely to benefit from that sort of rapid employment, and they are transitioned to MFIP. So the notion is it's starting at the front end, and certainly it depends upon what someone presents to you. And so if someone presents to you immediately with these issues, that is something that they are moving down that track. But a lot of it comes through assessment and ongoing relationships with the participants.
Other questions for the department? One question. Has there ever been any discussion between you and Deed, for example, about shifting this program over to sit with our other unemployment and back to work programs?
Mr. Chair, I don't have the capacity to answer that, but that is information that we certainly could provide you.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Any other questions on, you know, actually either of the two bills, 2576 or 20? I think, Representative Hayden, why don't you, were you?
Well, I think, you know, in lieu of the discussion in that we are under an immense fiscal crisis at the state, what I really wanted to do, or what I think would be well, is to lay these bills over or on the...
Lay them over. Sure.
Lay them over. But I say that with kind of these comments that I really do, members, want us to, you know, with all the parliamentary procedures and that we can do and people thinking about the more pressing things that they have to do, is to really be dedicated to have, you know, real discussion as we come over to talk about these issues. I absolutely respect Representative Abler, Representative Gottwald around the issue of how do we deal with this issue of poverty, how do we move people up, and how do we move people out versus people that become dependent and that are staying. I come from not only, you know, my personal experience, but I also come from my professional experience that people want to get out, that it is not a good place to be kind of waiting each and every month on a check that you ran and you've been waiting 2 weeks. That's the last time you had some money. So you're in this perpetual situation where you're getting yourself deeper and deeper in debt. I don't know. I just saw a series in Bridgeport, Connecticut. It was on a NPR, one of those kind of really smart shows, and they talked about a young lady there that lost cash assistance in Connecticut. They're down about 20 months. They're the most in the country. So they lost cash. She lost cash assistance at 20 months. They have food stamps, and that she goes in and she spends her money for her food, and by the 12th of the month, she is out. So essentially, she's getting herself in a situation where she has to go into what they call the bodega and borrow and open up a line of credit with the local grocery store at some outrageous rate of interest, and then on the first of the month pays half of that back of the money she should be spending on the food. Now, that might not even be legal for all our legal wants here, but that is what people are doing. And I just want us to be able to really think about it and then really have a perspective on this issue that people want to get out. And those that don't, we have a system, just like our criminal justice system, we have a system that works very well that catches them and penalizes them.
Where's the gobble?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hayden, I genuinely appreciate the dialogue we've gotten into. In fact, in this committee this year, we've actually had more substantive conversation about what we really need to do for Minnesotans, especially Minnesotans in need, than I've experienced in 3 or 4 years here. And some of that was difficult in one committee, and I think it's led to better discussion since. But make no doubt about it, from our side of the aisle or your side of the aisle, I mean, there are clearly people who see that we need to take care of immediate needs for people, mm-hmm. and nobody disrespects that, believe me, certainly not myself. Mm-hmm. And then there are those of us who really want to see Minnesotans, genuinely want to see Minnesotans from every background succeed. How do we bring them up out of situations of poverty and failure? How do we get them the jobs that they need? How do we help their families succeed and live the American dream? And so that's where economic development and workforce development, biosciences, all those things that we try to do to create the avenues of opportunity for people to come out of poverty come from. And so both our sides have ideas for how to do that. And it's great that we're talking this way and not in a way that says, well, you don't understand my perspective and you don't understand ours and that sort of thing. So I hope this gets to what Representative Abler was talking about eventually. You know, we had the commission to end poverty, and my question recently in my mind about that has been, so how'd that work out? Did you end poverty by 2020? Or is it going to end poverty by 2020? Probably not. But these kinds of substantive discussions about how do we meet immediate needs and then help people out of poverty and dependence who are capable of that, other people are always going to need help, and that's why we need strong safety net programs. But that's where we need to talk about what are the strategies from A to Z that will help us move people out of situations of poverty. And I welcome and thank you for the discussion.
I agree. Thank you, sir.
Okay. The and I guess the only thing that I would say is we do have this discussion about the budget pressures, right? And we have somehow this impression that because we face this $1.2 billion deficit, we can't talk about spending money on programs that don't exist today, which I think is really a false direction to go, because there is a choice to actually cut other things that aren't working more. And I have the sense in this committee we often go down the direction of, well, we have this deficit, so we shouldn't talk about new spending whatsoever. And I hope that we stop having that discussion, because if we really truly want to talk about prioritizing things, that ends that discussion right away, right? And so we're in a bad economic time right now. I don't know that we should have this program go from 2010 to 2012, maybe for a year. It would make sense, and I would be comfortable moving this vote on to the Finance Committee so that they could do that. But it sounds like we're going to lay the bill over, and so that, I think, is where we are. But I just would caution us as we move forward here that we do, you know, we've already, in my opinion, wrongly limited our discussion to cutting $1.2 billion. I think that's... Well, and we've had that discussion ever since I've been in the legislature. I think that's the wrong way to go, too. But that's for a whole other day. So I hope that at least we don't limit our creativity as we face these discussions going forward, to saying we can't consider any alternatives, because all we're going to be doing is keeping all the programs we have today and then cutting them, because that doesn't move us forward very well at all. All right. So I'm sure... which I think we may be hearing next week. So, all right. Seeing no further discussion, thank you, Representative Hayden.
You're welcome.
And we will adjourn.